to this time of the year, or to the exercise of looking at annual reports and assessing departmental performance. That is the approval of budgets earlier in the year. But those really are the input into what we see as an annual report. Then, of course, the State of the Nation address, which really provides the draft according to which departments must draw up the annual plan, the astray plan, review. So this is a task I know, honorable members, that we worked with you for the past little over 4 years. It's a task that you take seriously. But it's a task that I think as a committee, and I think it's appropriate, especially because this is going to be our last annual report together at this committee, to say that we have, I think, succeeded in many ways to really take a bipartisan approach in dealing with matters affecting this department. I think ostensibly because I think what it successfully did throughout the years, and I want to thank in his absence, of course, Paul Prasad, because I think he's, especially at the beginning of this committee, always made the point that international relations is one of the areas that where narrow party political interest should be minimized to the extent possible. Because in the final analysis, this is the one area of the web of our country that transcends really the party political divide. And that as a nation we must continue to project that to the outside world. And in that vein, I want to thank you, honorable members, for really taking an active and keen interest in matters affecting this department, without, of course, fear or favor in raising those issues that you think are critical, things that need to be corrected, but also raising them in a way that always sought to underscore the point that that working together we can achieve much, much more. And I want to acknowledge that today, especially because, as I said, this is our last annual report at this committee constituted by these members. So having said that, suffice it to say, a lot of work has been done in the past, both by of course by the department, but also by the committee. Understanding, of course, that our relationship with the department has never been that acrimonious as we, you know, as it in some instances the case between some committees in Parliament. And they are the departments over which they conduct oversight. And I think that ability to communicate and engage together with, engage with our department in a manner that to find solutions to problems, I think that helped us make the necessary progress required over the years at GM. And so we have done so to the best of our ability. And we've criticized, I mean, there were times when we didn't understand it around some issues, and we fought with you on those issues that we thought are, and that's correct, and that's what we should do. But always understanding that ours is not an inherently acrimonious relationship, because we are part, the cogs of the same wheel, and all of it in our country's interest, really, to ensure that this department delivers on its mandate in an effective and in an efficient manner. So, honorable members, those few words I want to I want us to move into into the report in question today.
Sorry, Tim, I have to touch on a school now, but I have been looking for the Auditor General's report for the department itself, and I cannot find it. Now, I find that particularly problematic in the light of the fact that we have one for the African Nation Fund. And as you quite rightly point out, the Auditor General's report is quite a critical implement in order to look at the performance of the department. Now, perhaps you can guide me. I see where they use the Auditor General's report to term objective, but I can't actually find the actual report itself.
The Auditor General's report should be in this. In this report. Normally, look, the reason why... Okay. Look, let me... It's always the case, honorable members, that the ARF report is always separate, always. Because it's an entity of the department. Right? So it reports separately. Right? The Auditor General's report is the annual report. Okay. Can somebody quickly... Page 10 and 11, I'm sorry. Order, or honorable member, order. Remember, if you go to the financial, fine, just save it. Okay, let's just give the honorable. Okay, no, that's fine. That's fine. You must understand, honorable please. Yes. In fact, we were in Strasbourg, and we haven't seen the reports until we got back to Cape Town. Now, I got back today, 4 years ago. Why, for the first time, I had opportunity to read through the document the day before yesterday. So, yeah. Okay, thank you. Point taken.
We don't feel fine.
Okay, so thanks so much. Okay, are we settled now?
Thank you.
Okay, thank you so much. Honourable members, we will start with the report of the Auditor General. Now, Mr. Dibishi, can I?
Dibishi.
Okay. I don't know who will lead us into the report, but please be so kind to introduce members of your delegation as well, and indicate to us also who's going to do the presentation. And of course, in the event that some of the other members have to contribute or add something, please feel free to do so. Thank you. Are we starting with the department?
Thank you. What we'll do here is the presentation is for the portfolio. So we're going to talk about both the department and the entity. Thank you. My name is Hamid Dibishi. I'm the business executive in National P, responsible for the portfolio. I've got my colleague, Kumari Naika, who's the senior manager on the audit. At the back, I've got Gourmet and Fezziwe Mbata. And Chair, the way that we've actually done the presentation is actually in four parts. The first part, we'll be looking at the state track of the progress in the audit outcome. In other words, when you're looking at the audit report, we'll compare it to the past 2 years. Then we're going to be having a view on the 3 financial years. After that, we'll look at what areas needs to be focused on, and those are the 6 focus areas that you normally look at as the auditor general. We'll then look at what vital actions need to be taken in order for the department to get to a clean audit. Then lastly, we look at what's the progress on commitments and which key roles they are need to take, what actions, if any. And after that, Paul will be happy to take any questions if there's any questions on the floor. And I think on that note, I'll just hand over to Kumari to take us through the presentation. And I have to apologize for the miscommunication between our office and the Secretariat. We actually gave them the soft copy so that we can project it, but I don't know what happened. Of course, we will do. So we gave our office, not your office, but we did give to our office here in Cape Town so that we can project. For some odd reason, it never goes to the Secretariat. I apologize.
Good morning, Chair, honorable members, Deputy Minister, and colleagues from the department. The presentation that we have in front of you is on the audit outcome of the international relations portfolio. Slide 2 talks to the deputation process of the Auditor General, which has a constitutional mandate and as the supreme audit institution of South Africa. We exist to strengthen our country's democracy by enabling oversight, accountability, and governance in the public sector through our auditing process, and we provide world public confidence. Now, it's important as your role as the portfolio committee, you have a direct link in terms of the auditor's responsibility over the department. Moving on to slide 3. Here's the 4 areas that Tammy spoke to you. Our first focus is going to be on what is the status and progress of the audit outcomes of the portfolio. Slide 4, you have a picture of what the portfolio consists of. You have the Department of International Relations and Cooperation, and then you have the African Remittance and International Cooperation Fund that forms part of the portfolio. What you don't see on this picture is the new entity, the South African Development Partnership Agency. This agency was established as per the 14th of June 2013 Presidential Proclamation. So going forward, you're going to be having a different picture in terms of the portfolio. I'm going to move straight on to the status of the audit and the progress of audit outcomes of the portfolio. Now, if you look on slide 6, you see that over the past 3 years, the audit outcomes have been unqualified with findings, and there's been no movement with regards to that. If you have to draw a root cause for this for the department, it may be due to slow responses in timely addressing matters that have been previously reported regarding ineffective reviews, deficiencies in key reconciliation processes and monitoring controls, and enforcing oversight responsibilities of management. In terms of the ARF, the unchanged picture for ARF, this was mainly due to the lack of a proper governance framework over the activities of the fund, which has resulted in the unchanged audit outcome. If we move on to slide 7, here we look at the status of compliance with legislation. If you look at our audit report, you will see that our report is broken up into 2 parts. The first part deals with financial statements, and then it moves on to the other reporting responsibilities. Now, compliance is one of our other reporting responsibilities. And you will see for 12-13, we had material findings at both the department and the area. And if you look at the quantity of the issues, there's been a regression. If you look at just the department itself, although there's a decrease in the number of non-compliant matters, the 4 remaining matters have been repeat findings, and these include the material misstatements with regards to the financials, creditors not settled within 30 days, ineffective steps to prevent irregular expenditure, and ineffective asset management. A new area, focus area in terms of compliance is where we look at the oversight over all reporting entities. and the role that the department played in this, and we had another non-compliance in terms of the ineffective monitoring of the ARF entity. In terms of the ARF, there were issues reporting regarding lack of policies and procedures, lack of risk assessment, lack of project management, lack of terms of reference for key governance structures, which include the advisory committee, the secretariat. We had ineffective policies and procedures to prevent and detect irregular expenditure. We had material misstatements to the financial statements. We had the lack of the significance and materiality framework. There was no documented delegations of authority or organogram. So overall, there were a number of non-compliance issues which gave rise to our overall assessment of the regression with regard to compliance matters. The next part of on page 8 deals with the predetermined objective process. And our first slide deals with the quality of the annual performance report. And here again, you will see that we had material findings at both the department as well as the ARF entity. Now, with the department, there has been a concerted effort by the department to address issues that have been previously reported, and the one main issue relates to their predetermined targets not being specific. With regards to the ARF, here there was a complete breakdown in terms of the whole performance management process, and this was mainly due to the lack of that governance framework that I spoke to you earlier about. There was no strategic plan, there was no annual performance plan, and neither was there an annual performance report for the ARF. Over the page, we look at the findings on the quality of annual performance reports. The first category we look at is non or late submission, and you will see that there was one entity, and that's the ARF, where there was a non-submission in terms of the annual performance report. In terms of the usefulness of the information, and this is where we look at the SMART criteria, you would see that it was one entity, and this was the department with the issue being targets not being specific. And in terms of reliability of the information, we have no issues on that. Okay. The next part of the presentation deals with the six risk areas that that needs to be focused on. The first issue is around supply chain management. And here we have seen a regression in terms of portfolio. With regards to GovCo, there has been an effort to address findings that have been previously reported, so there were no issues highlighted on the audit report with regards to supply chain management. With regard to the ARF, however, there was a number of non-compliance to issues reported with regards to the non-compliance to supply chain management procedure. The next risk area deals with the quality of the performance report, and here it talks to the findings regarding targets not being specific in respect of GERCO, and there being no annual performance report for the ARF. With regards to the next area, which is the information technology control, remember all of the IT systems of the ARF run parallel with the GERCO system, so this is applicable to both. We had issues around the user access and the security management controls that need some attention. The next area deals with the quality of the submitted financial statements, and you'll see that there was a regression here as well in terms of both the department and the ARF had material adjustments related to the financial statements that were originally submitted to us for auditing. With regards to human resources management, there were matters that were previously highlighted on previous year's audit reports with regards to GERCO. These issues have been are in progress in terms of being addressed. There were no issues on HR matters reported with us. However, with regards to the ARF, we noted the lack of the delegations of authority and the lack of a proper organism for the entity. The next, this area deals with financial health, and this is where we do an assessment in terms of key financial ratios to see if there's any concern with regards to going concern or various other matters. And for both the entity as well as the department, we have no issues reported around that. Now, to focus a bit more on slide 9 in terms of the quality of the submitted financial statements, if we have looked at both the entity and the department, both of them were able to avoid a qualification because they processed the material adjustments that were identified during our audit process. Now, this has been a repeat finding for both, and it wasn't adequately actioned. In terms of the adjustments that were processed, some of the adjustments for that included adjustments to the following categories of accounts balances or transactions: movable tangible capital assets, minor assets, immovable capital assets, the PPP issues, payment for capital assets, and current payments. And with regards to the ARF, there were material adjustments processed with regards to irregular expenditure, accounts payable, and other income. And it's important to note, had these adjustments not been processed, both ADEPCO and the entity would have been qualified. Now, moving on to part 3 of the presentation, which deals with what actions should be taken. This talks to our drivers of key controls, which if we're moving to a green environment, there should be an improvement in terms of the key control. You will see on leadership, whereas for 11-12, 58% was rated as being good, it's now declined to 44%, 20% are in the concerning category, and 36% need some serious intervention. With regards to financial and performance management, you will see the 43% under the good category remain constant. In terms of the concerning, 11-12 was sitting at 67%. This has declined to 10%, and you will see that 47% needs intervention. And in terms of the last category, which is governance, you will see whereas in 11-12, all of it was sitting under the good category, there's now been a decline in terms of only 61% being rated as good, 22% have been rated as concerning, and 17% need significant intervention. Now, if we have to look at reasons for these regressions, it comes down to a few issues. There were delays or lack of adequate action being taken to address matters that were previously reported. In terms of the ARF, there was an inadequate and or lack of governance framework, which includes policies and procedures, risk assessments and strategy, ineffective controls. In terms of both of the entity and the department, there was ineffective monitoring and review of reconciliation. There was a slow response in addressing the deficiencies related to the asset management process, with new initiatives only being rolled out in February 2013. There's inadequate review of the financial reporting process and inadequate compliance monitoring. So these are some of the root causes that gives you the picture that you have in terms of the drivers of key controls. Now, to look at further what will address the widespread root causes, some of the interventions that should be considered is to implement control to gather and monitor the information required for annual disclosure notes. Reviewing of annual performance plans needs to be strengthened to ensure that indicators and targets are smart and compliance to performance management systems must be monitored. The performance of key monthly reconciliations and the quarterly asset verification needs to be closely monitored. and the review of the annual financial statement needs to be enhanced to eliminate findings prior to their submission for audit purposes. Okay, now moving on to what is the process and the commitment that the CBC made and which key role play to take action. In terms of new commitments obtained from the department, there will be enhanced performance and consequence management. There will be preparation of monthly reconciliations as well as asset verification, which includes controls to monitor information required for the preparation of the disclosure notes. There will be a detailed analysis of root causes for recurring asset issues despite new interventions being rolled out so that appropriate action can be taken. And there will be an increased attention to a root cause-focused action plan to address audit findings. In terms of the engagement with the minister, we requested the following commitment, that an investigation be carried out to determine the root cause of all the non-compliance matters reported for the ARS, the finalizing of the appointment of the CFO, which we are now aware that that has been finalized. There should be a proper governance framework for the ARS and SATCA, and this needs to be established urgently. In terms of implementation of proper oversight mechanisms over the ARS, this should include the appointment process finalized prior to the entity being in operation. Policies and procedures should be compiled, approved, and adherence to this should be monitored. There should be terms of references for all committees. There should be an adequate risk assessment process together with a risk strategy developed. And there needs to be mechanisms to fast-track the turnaround time in terms of age effect with regards to the AMS or SAPA. In terms of commitment that we require from this committee and from you as chair, we need assistance in terms of monitoring and assessing the outcomes of the investigation and matters reported on in the ARS. With regard to the CFO appointment, that has now been finalized. You need to assist the department where possible by providing guidance and appropriate governance framework for the ARS and SATCA. And you should meet the audit committee chair at least once a year with a view of ensuring that all assurance levels is at the same board. So those are basically the commitments that we request of this committee and you as chair, and that is the audit outcomes of the portfolio. Okay.
Thank you so much. Now, I'm trying to read the facial expressions of my boss. They don't look too content, but not happy either. thank you so much. Let me just grab it by the tail. Indeed, I had a meeting with the Office of the Auditor General some weeks ago, and before I was briefed about the audit outcome and all the issues, and the basic briefing we just received. And indeed, I made the commitment that it had, and I have no doubt that the committee will do that as well. And indeed, following up on that commitment, I had almost an immediate meeting with the chair of the audit committee subsequently after that engagement. So I'm just saying that certainly from my perspective as chair, these are matters that I take seriously, and certainly have my commitment in that of the committee, but we'll follow up on our own commitments. Honorable members, I will open it up for any questions, clarity, any comments, whatever. I have uploaded you enough in today's session.
No, Secretary, you must understand that we must be engaged with all the different individuals that are here in the department. We must say that the program teacher is engaging in a variety of committees. The audit committee has done a very good job in reflecting on the institution and has maintained their mandate. But also, I do think that they have already made as a chairperson in engaging and acknowledging the work that they have done. Let's keep support to the nomination and keep the matter as being investigated so that we could, when the full picture is returned, any particular institution has been the opportunity. But let us keep the work that has been done by the audit committee. My one tip of the president, under that kind of leadership, we should be able to get into the case and put it out.
I would like to thank the audit committee for giving us a good brief on what's going on. But all that's left now is the department to reply to all these questions that the audit committee has asked. So we are waiting their response on these items. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Let me just say that I am more than, I take it quite seriously. Because if one looks at the overall performance of the department, you will see there's been a regression in almost every aspect. And that's unfortunate. I mean, but one can't just wish it away and say, let's put things in place. I mean, in terms of asset monitoring, that's been there for some time. Assessment, it's been there for some time, and there's been, we see, for quickly, so I'm just going back to the report that we have had. If one looks at the pace of improving the drivers of key control, one has seen in both leadership, financial performance management, and governance, we've gone quite significantly backwards. Quite significantly backwards. And we, as the committee that exercise oversight over the executive, need to find out why. And there needs to be an explanation from the department as to why. What I would have liked to have seen, and which would perhaps, if I could disaggregate the overall performance of the department per se, as opposed to that which of the ARS. Because I think the ARS, possibly a source, was quite significant. And so, to get a proper picture of the department itself, the department could possibly have come out better. But I'll come to the ARS, because the ARS report is damning in the extreme. Damning from virtually every single rule and regulation that the Director General, as the correct authority, was supposed to follow, was ignored. Even worse in that respect, there was no oversight, because in terms of reports that he had delivered to the executive authority which are the ministers, there was no inquiry.
No, I thought that your question, when you reference this and try to get a picture, you make all of us uncomfortable to follow the narrative. But taking from where the AGA is concerned, I thought this is a step ahead and will give us an opportunity to answer what I'm going into. Now, I'm going to question that where that is recording this information. I wanted to say, why don't you think that the AGA is concerned? Who is that AGA is calling to the information? Who is coming?
I do nothing but actually repeating or pointing out or underlining what A is in this report, which I no doubt is heard in this country. That's what I'm doing. They're just repeating it and pointing out how seriously we have gone backwards.
No,
that's the point I made.
Honourable Member.
Honourable Member. Yes, please.
Right.
Honorable, please allow the member to make his points. If you wish to respond, you can always respond.
Okay. See, Mr. Chairman, the point I'm making is simply this. It would have been good to have had the seats segregated, because we see in terms of the report, the old Senate report in the ARS, that they've mentioned. I don't believe that there was success in the department itself. But what has happened is because you've combined the two together, which I'm sure you're supposed to do, what has happened is it's distorted the picture. And that's my concern, because the department comes out negatively because of total mismanagement in the ARS. And I would have liked to have that disaggregation, because I think the department would have come out better in terms of the actual indicators that we have before us. Because you will see, as you indicated, that in leadership, financial management and governance, the department as a whole has gone backwards, and I don't believe the department as a whole has gone backwards, but possibly because of the ARS, it has gone backwards. And that's the point I'm trying to make. The one thing I do want to inquire about, Mr. Chairman, the Minister, and I need response from the Deputy Minister in this regard. I mean, in terms of the governance of the ARS, ultimately, the ARS, as indicated in point 14, reports on a regular basis to the executive. Now, the executive has to be a minister in context. Why was there no exercise of control in that context? Why were the ministers, ministers responsible there, if I don't know who it is, not exercising control and finding out why the relevant sections, whether they be of regulations, treasury regulations, or requirements as stipulated in the report, why were they not followed through, and why not worded? Why were they the relevant questions of the ask? So then if you go through exactly what it is, I mean, I'm sure that you must have read this report. I'm sure you have a detailed knowledge of it. But I think you have to acknowledge. I mean, it looks as if the person who made the decision acted on their own. There were no structures, there were no policies, there were no references in place, there was nothing. How was this allowed to happen? And I think we need to know the answer to that, because the department suffers accordingly. And there's a blemish of the department, simply because the person in charge, the accounting officer for the ARS, was a random book. He could do what he liked, when he liked, how he liked. And he answered to nobody, where he should have been answering to somebody. Now, I think if we get that basic answer, we could clear up the blemishes which have now been transposed onto the department, which I think shouldn't have been transposed into the department. And then, ultimately, these little blocks here, which indicate downward grading, possibly would not have been either downgrading or would not have been severe. But I do hope that we can get an initial response in that regard, and then I'll come back to that.
All right. At this point, I note your questions directed to the department and to the Deputy Minister. However, what I advise that for purposes of this presentation, that we stick to the Auditor General, their presentation, their response for the matters that they want to respond on. Those that are relevant, we pass them. They are noted by the department, and in their presentation, they can then respond to those issues as we have to go along. But can I, before I give to Honorable Suleiman and then to Honorable Boy, share your sentiment that this is indeed, and I think, well, fairly unfair, interesting material, but it is indeed transposed onto the department in a manner that risks really distorting, you know, the whole picture. Now, I understand how, you know, in terms of how this presents, because indeed the ARF is an entity of the department, so you can understand that to some extent. My own impression, looking at the ARF and department, These are almost two different pictures. They are almost two different pictures. And so I think, especially in respect of the AIS, that question has to be answered. Why? Why does it, you know, reflect in the manner that it does? And yes, the department reflects differently. But those, let's park that for the department for now, okay? Honorable Suleiman, you and then.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. The Attorney General is requesting information from the Minister, from you, the Chair, from the department. In what position may you react to that? To detect the criminal request from the CE's investigation to be carried out to determine the root cause of all the non-compliance methods reported on the ARS. For example, maybe the consumers can just respond to that, and even you chair also ask information from you and from the department. Thank you.
Can I say that the information provided by the agency is reflected by the company? But you see, there will always be difficulty when it deals with issues of leadership, like an analytical audit. It's not said only difficult with one committee, with another. So the issue of leadership becomes a general problem. That's what the auditor says. And for me, until there is determinant of what is it that we're fighting about in the area, where did the collapse happen? Now what they are saying is these are issues of government. That's also very general. And I said the fact is we just stick to find the investigation. Because you see what? It says a city. But we try all of us are famous. Even Parliament. Because we are here when the DG comes in report. And the report will be reflected and put in front of us. And I don't want to fall within that and trap you. And get trapped into that. That we have never provided leadership. You see, I have felt that you would always be able to guide us in a very astute manner that could have been able to help you have a conversation of me to open your mouth. But if you fall into this one, in the how the body shall never present it without getting into the proper system, you all have to be guilty. And that is not the problem. So because it raises the issue of leadership, it raises the issue of governance, and everything, that it does bring up the issue of the whole department. Now the point is, where were we as members of Parliament when this was happening? Have they never provided us with any report at any stage? Besides, we find it all of us see that there's a problem. But there's somebody who has been managing the department for a long time. I don't think we should open ourselves up into it without seeing the proper support of the public where the witness was. I have seen that to that. I've been aware, and you have made it aware, within the presentations about the IF and challenge. And I thought that we must get down to that detail and understand what has happened there. Is it on our side, the parliamentarians, or is it torture, or on whose side? So that then it gets into that detail, that people could deal with it. So I'm not saying, that's why I don't want to, I was not objecting to honorable, and not agree to the issue. But I'm just saying, the generality can become very costly to the institution as a whole, and for those that are supposed to, in terms of the constitution, monitoring and oversight over the department. And I don't want that entrapped into the particular government. I want us to be able to be told that as members of parliament, this is where you have not done your responsibility. And I'm running to those technicalities. For those technicalities, I accept what the auditor general is saying, but I don't want to concede that in the portfolio committee has never done anything of overseeing. This is where I'm saying it's my particular challenge with what you're saying. And I'm just pleading that let's allow the investigation to take its course and let's begin, as you are saying, let's begin to work out yes and the departments, yes and the political leadership, and yes and those that have approached the officials have done and provide the things. But the generality of the auditor general is quite a bit. I don't want to buy it.
So, all right. Thank you. Look, AG, please unpack for us what you mean by leadership, or lack thereof. Governance, what does it mean? I think financial and performance management, those are fine. Are those two issues, so that we all have the same understanding at least, because it might mean different things to different people. So let's do away with the generalization and zoom in on what is meant by leadership and what is meant by governance. Is there any specific question we want to put to the Portugal General?
I thought about what this means. Your signal indicated that CESA has been registered, I think, on the 14th of June 2013. Now, we were expecting to post this as CESA bill. Can I just inquire, how can it be registered? And I presume it's not up and running yet because CESA bill hasn't been passed. I'm beginning to be a bit confused as to where the ARS ends and the CESA begins, because we haven't processed anything so far as CESA is concerned.
No, I suspect it might be a question for the department. Please note it as well. I see you. Okay, that's fine. Any other question to the AG? Okay. You might respond to other issues that you think are pertinent to some of the matters.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, when we assess the governance, we normally look at the governance structure in a department or an entity. And that would normally relate to your internal audit, your audit committee, and any other committees that exercise oversight. For the ARS, it would have been all the ARS committees that are there to exercise oversight. And when we look at this, we say, in terms of the operation of ARS, what is it that internal audit should have done? Internal audit should have went in and did their risk-based internal audit to see if ARS is actually covering all the required areas. After doing that process, the internal audit should have tabled their reports to the audit committee. The audit committee is exercising oversight. The audit committee should have actually sat in a meeting and evaluated if all the risks that are pertinent to the ARS have been covered in the 3-year rolling plan of the internal audit, and are there any issues that are coming out of that process? That process was not there. The risk assessment for the ARS, we looked at the risk assessment in the department was sufficiently covered, but the ARS was not covered anyway. So when you talk of governance is those critical governance structures that we look at. When you talk of leadership, for an example, we look at specifically around the areas of policies, the terms of reference, who's got the final responsibility to ensure that whatever is happening in the department is actually regularized. In other words, the policies and procedures to ensure that whatever is happening within a prescript and in line with the requirements of the applicable entity, the department. And that's the responsibility of the leadership. And that's the responsibility of management, and it's no one else, us management. Now, all those lessons that we've identified is something that we said. So the last point or the last defense mechanism that's available to address this issue is actually management. That's where now we can go back and we say to the management of the department.
Okay, I think that's sufficient but leadership and governance is it. So it's not a general okay, now thank you. I, in absence of any other questions, clarity to the AG,
AG, you see to me, you have been clear about this. You have helped me, I'm always amazed at how you come to this party. It's supposed to be very important to the issue that we are so overworking. But this general stance, I think, needs to keep on the issue. the issue of leadership and the issue of audit and the internal audit committee seems to be a body that nobody is touching about what does it do. Well, you seem to give me a report that you are saying you are not telling me what is the internal audit, what role has it played over some time to have been able to pinpoint these weaknesses and just draw them to attention. So that when we deal with this matter, because as I'm saying that in all your competency, I brought this the last day to another auditor general, but it's leadership, it's governance, it's governance. It's not just the finding there's this particular department. So it's not a new phenomenon, it's not a new explanation for providing. It's something that I've observed. The auditor general seems to be providing a generality or a generic approach. But what my concern is, what is the role of the audit? You have asked us to create internal audit committee. What is it that they do? And at which stage do you differ with them as the overall body? I just wanted to get that clarity because it does confuse me. They supposed to be an audit committee that was supposed to provide us with some information and intended before you arrive at the final report. What happened? Where is it in this aspect of the process? That's what I say to the prepared panel.
I ask you what the Honourable Member is saying. I mean, if one looks at point 13 to 26 of the Auditor General's report, it is quite specific as to what was wrong or what was not happening. Now, in that context, what is the role of the Audit Committee? I mean, it should not be Audit Committee. That's not our function. Should not the audit committee at that early stage, I mean, if we look at point number 14, the submission of quarterly reports, surely in the first quarter comes along and the quarterly report doesn't come through, the audit committee should be saying, hey, where's the quarterly report? And I'm sure if one went through every single one of these points, at some stage, somebody should have been getting alarm bells. It's not the audit committee. Obviously, there'll be management, I have no doubt about that. But the audit committee is there to audit management. Now, surely the audit committee should have been saying, hey, what is going on? Why aren't these regulations being followed? Why aren't the reports coming through, etc., etc., etc.? Because
it's only right at the end of the process that
the audit general comes in and says, hey, these prescripts have not been followed through, and why. So, I mean, I'm really not.
Thanks, I would answer that question. But on your question, I think the responsibility of the internal audit and the responsibility of the audit committees are very clear. The Treasury regulation and in the KFMA itself, it's got how the audit committee needs to be comprised of, who should sit in the audit committee, and what are their responsibilities. In addition to that, the Treasury regulations have got pretty much specific items that the audit committee needs to look at. And one of those things includes the areas of risk. And on the internal audit, it also has the same matter that they need to look at. So there are specific issues. All issues we're reporting here are issues that should have been picked up earlier on in the process, had there been proactive action by the internal audit and the audit committee to ensure that these things are not going to end up in the material misstatements in the financial statements and being picked up by the auditor general and thereby adjusted to correct the financial statements. But the responsibilities are not vague or anything. They're very clear for the audit committee and they're very clear for the internal audit.
Okay. Members, may I remind you that we met with the audit committee in January.
Mm-hmm.
We met with them. Is that what I'm reading in my history? But the point is, I think the point is that what the AG is saying is that it is precisely that breakdown that happened there that actually created the optimal condition for
some of the things to happen, and for some of the things that were supposed to happen, not happen. So radical governance is a pertinent issue in the Audi House, in the Audi House, that breakdown of governance there. So that's okay. I'm sure for further details we'll be able to talk to the department, should be able to shed light on some of the issues, even pertaining to the audit committee. As for your request, perhaps just for assuring the Auditor General that from our perspective as the committee, we will certainly intensify our oversight, especially about those areas identified. We are trying to do so following the last year's annual report and the matters that were pertinently raised in both the AG's report and the department's annual report, followed up with the department from time thereafter. We will do the same, perhaps zooming in on some of the more pertinent issues. So that commitment from myself as the chair of the committee you have, I'm also pleased that of course we will engage the department in perhaps expand a bit more, but indeed in your own engagements with the department and the minister in particular, she gave you a set of commitments as well as set out in this document. The deputy minister, I'm sure you will speak a bit more to that. But certainly from our side, we have that commitment to engage on the issue. I think, as I said, the good start, as I met with the chair of the and deputy chair of the audit committee, I think it's almost the same thing as the following day I met with you. We will continue to engage. And in fact, I'm told that in fact there is a new audit committee that has been set up. That has been appointed. I have no doubt those are highly competent and highly qualified people. With vast experience, I have no doubt that they are working together, ourselves and of course the department will be able to make together possible strides on some of the issues. But thank you so much for having your delegation. We hope we'll meet you in a very short space of time.
Would it be possible or advisable to disaggregate this information, or are you not allowed to?
I think it's possible to disaggregate information, but then what we need to know is it will only be for the purpose of seeing how the department looks. Because if you want now to see the ARS separately, that's not going to happen because they don't separate all the committee. For the department, I think it's possible.
Mr. Kim, can we formally request that? I certainly would like to see the information aggregated. But I think after this exercise, because of the performance of the ARS and our performance, the problem itself has been abolished. Now, if I can just aggregate that information, take the ARS out, you might not see improvement in the indicators.
Yeah. So, Chair, that can be done. Perhaps we can send that kind of slide directly to you for just being a few of them.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you so much. You were requested not to leave. Because there might be some issues that you might want to speak to. For now, thank you so much. We'll then move to the presentation of the department, led by Deputy Minister Fransman. The floor is yours.
Thank you so much, Honourable Chairperson, and also Honourable Members. As well as the Auditor General's office, I'm flanked by my department and led by the management and led by the acting Director General, Acting Auditor General. I think bearing in mind what was said earlier, as well as the presentation that we've received from the AG and some of the discussion, I think let me start off by, and the presentation will be done in twofold. I will do some of the opening remarks, then I will hand over to the Acting Director General to take us through the presentation. But I think what's very, very important, the flip side to what we've just heard, especially from our members, I think we want to indicate that we are taking very, very seriously the issues faced by the AG, but also the issues and the questions that were raised just now by members. But let me indicate the department has spent 98% of the budget. The second important point is that the department has received an unqualified order. So for a moment, if one actually reflect and just close one's ears and think, it could have been as if there was disclaimers, it could have been as there were a disaster, we heard early statements like Nick and others. I think it's important that we take away the bells and the whistle and deal with the technicality for the real issue. The reality is that this department has received their unqualified orders, not a qualification and not a disclaimer. I'm not getting into that presentation that was done by the agent, by the Acting Director General. It is important to note that the department, that the ARF have had an emphasis that you have. So there is that technical differentiation. It is important to note that from the issues that the agent offers related, the preventative, and we've seen it as some of the preventative and the cautionary measure that they raise, please make sure that these issues are being dealt with, because you can create further areas in the long run, it can take you back. And I think that's important. So it's more of a preventative issue and a concern that the last 2-3 years, some of these issues were raised, and yes, the department has implemented corrective measures in some, but we're still seeing some of the concerns. And I think it's important just to bring that balance in it, otherwise we lose we go into a spin of crises, mess, etc. I want to start off though by just highlighting some of the successes, just generally in terms of the highlights that the department has made. This, it all happens in a context, because it is the annual report and we're presenting it in a context of certain highlights that we believe the portfolio which was, I think, central, the portfolio committee, which was central in assisting us in many a way with some of these successes. I want to highlight some. This was the year and the review which we've seen the election of Dr. Lamine Zuma. A very, very important and fundamental issue, because she has been the first woman, as well as the first candidate of the SADC region, to hold this particularly important post. That's strategic and essential precisely because we as a country believe that it helps with the advancement of our African agenda. But also the chair and the review speaks to the hosting of the Global Diaspora Summit in May of last year, which brought our strategic legacy initiative to say, how do we in fact as the African diaspora work in partnership wherever we are in the globe, Honorable Chairperson, through what we call a joint program of action. This is also the year we've seen the deepening of the role of the President, President Zuma, as the chair of the African Union MIPAT Presidential Infrastructural Championing Initiative. We somehow talked about the corridor program, but also the North South East West Access in terms of rail infrastructure and other issues. We've seen this portfolio committee, including members from all the political persuasions in this committee, giving support to that agenda in the spirit of our focus on Africa. But it was also the other review where we discussed various areas of interventions, including peace missions, etc. You'd recall that our year of as the chair of Troika ended in August of last year, that dealt with mediation efforts as well as the global political agreement in Zimbabwe, as well as the work in Madagascar. and over the next 2 weeks we will be seeing the impact of the elections in Madagascar, the first round of the elections. Again, it was because of the collective effort of this department with the country at large. We want to thank the members of the Program Committee that also were participating in the process in Zimbabwe in the recent past. So we've seen election observers team in different areas. This was also the year of the review where we in fact had a very successful press summit. And what was interesting of the big summit and the rollout thereafter, which was more in the April, May, June period, was the post summit to put up this modality which we call the BRICS a BRICS Development Bank, which and what was also different to our summit, the other BRICS summit, was in fact we lived up as a country to the notion that we cannot have a BRICS summit on the continent and not bring directly in participation leadership of the continent. So we had roughly 19 heads of state in South Africa when that happened. That is an important and a critical factor in the context of our foreign relations agenda. Also, our tenure until December 2012 in the UN Security Council, and the members would remember that both in Parliament, both in the oversight engagement, but also in our common engagement as government, that the issue of working through the modalities of how do we strengthen and deepen the regional integration into the UN security processes and the question of reforms emerging. A critical indicator of last year was when South Africa getting up 1 month of the UN Security Council as the chair, we were able to put in place a mechanism for regional respect and regional cohesion when it comes to the UN Security Council. And we've seen advances made, and early this year we've seen some of that activities rolled up. As we've departed from the UN Security Council, we also have been elected chairperson to ECOSOC and for the period of 2013-2015. And a particular responsibility over the next year and a half will be to design and redefine the post-2015 development agenda. It's also the year under review when South Africa played a very, very active role in the context of issues of elimination of racism, discrimination against sexual orientation, and religion and those type of value issues. We've seen many bilateral mechanisms that we had to assess, had to review, but also ensuring the training of at least around about 2,000 officials through various training programs. Why I think it's imperative that one raise some of that. We've recently seen the successful launch and initiating of, in terms of a public diplomacy, again in the context of, I think it was in the context of BRICS, we designed a strategy in the year under review that was not BRICS in the context of also this high-end government-to-government or business engagement. We've gone to every province in South Africa through public diplomacy, reaching the ordinary community, and it's an interesting factor because how do you demystify issues of family relations right to the person somewhere in Bulawayo or somewhere in Colorado Park, and we've attempted to do that, and it's a very interesting model that starts to emerge in the country through what we call a public diplomacy program. So we've seen quite a few of those type of successes, and again a new factor that we started to introduce is the issue of our national agenda in the context of economic diplomacy. The balance between our value-based system and economic and diplomacy and the competition that we started to test this year. I thought of highlighting those things, Honorable Chairperson, because somehow it is very, very important that as one of our honorable members that side indicated, that the thing about the AIF, don't cloud everything that the department is doing. If one wants to be in, as honorable member Niyami Bwe, a pastor, you would say, count the tons of blessings as well. And I think we would want the committee to express also their appreciation of those counting of blessings. in the context of what we've achieved. I mean, let me, and again reiterating, the even in the context of compliance, the value chain issues, the honoring the departmental processes on the financing side, I can safely say we were able to deal with many of that. Now let me come to the issue that the issue of ministerial recommendations to the minister. Let me just touch on that, then I'll hand over to the department. I think there was a slide earlier that indicated commitments requested from ministers. I think our chairperson is best to go into. I think we're sitting here and saying, as the minister and as a department, we've taken very, very seriously some of those issues of precaution that were raised that can result into the future on a qualification or something else. And I think this is our position on these matters. I think the first thing we picked up the concern around the AIF and some of the stuff that also in the media over the last while and the allegations, etc. I can now say that we have commissioned an investigation into this matter. The in terms of reference, just so that people, members of Parliament, will be able just to appreciate the sense of reference. We've gone through a process, and the minister made it clear that she wants to actually look into this matter so that we can unbundle some of the negativity issues and through an independent investigation bring forth a report. And this is just to quote one or two points out of the terms of reference. In light of the report of the AG, the report of the accounting officer, as well as the report of the audit committee, meaning we've taken into account all the elements that raised concerns. We didn't say only the AG, or we've actually dealt even with the concerns raised at the audit committee, which was admitted to the executive authority regarding irregular expenditure. I'm not going to go into all that before many of the years and so on. It is recommended that a comprehensive investigation be conducted. And then the scope of the investigation, the investigator shall conduct his or her investigation to the irregular expenditure highlighted in the report. Specifically 3.2.2, establish whether there is any evidence of corruption and fraud in connection with above mentioned irregular expenditure incurred by the department. 3.2.3, establish whether there is substance to the allegations of intimidation and victimization of auditors raised by the audit committee. Why sort of highlighting those issues is because we felt whatever we've heard as the executive authority, whatever we've picked up through any processes, we felt that even putting that, meaning not to keep it on the chair implicitly, but actually to highlight those things. So commitments and requests, we started to act already in a sense, after we've seen those public issues, we started to put in place that. And we've got, in fact, the person who is advocate, in the course of that, in fact, is heading up that particular investigation through a justified process. The agents already report that the finalization of the appointment of the CFO is done. So in terms of those recommendations, they have gone through process and that has gone through cabinet. A proper governance framework for the ARF. And I think an important point around the investigation, we believe that whatever will come through the investigation in terms of reference must also be able to guide certain recommendations that need to be taken into the SAPA process. Because it shows the systemic failures in the lack of regulated issues and how do we even tighten that. So we believe we can serve as a very strong corrective mechanism in this. So a proper governance appointed the agency office, right? A proper governance framework for the ARS and that's going to be established. We believe through this regulation process, some of those inherited positions we can actually take as recommendations. Appointment process finalized to operating policies and procedures, terms of reference for committee, the risk assessment process, and the risk strategy, mechanism to fast track turnaround of aid requests. The minister has decided to, in fact, appoint, set up a task, this is not an investigation, to in fact put in place a task team that will assist the department management with the implementation of the AGS expedition. So some of what will this task team will engage the AG, will engage the internal, I'm not talking investigative issues now. We'll engage that with all those issues that were raised and they put in place a time frame with very clear focus in what one we call clean audit or clean audit, but just in my terminology say how do we clear the deck, how do we make them clear the concern. So that is what we've agreed in the minister. The top team, the minister director, will also serve as an ME tool, monitoring evaluation mechanism to the minister to regularly report minimum in 12 months, etc. And now in the phases. So we've taken very, very strongly the point that was raised by the AG on that particular matter. Not in its issue of a crisis, but in its issue of this kind of alerting us on some of the fundamental contradictions. If it just in conclusion before I hand over to the department, therefore, the issue of the ALS, and now I'm not going to speak about the investigation itself and those allegations that were made and some of the findings on that issue. The African Renaissance Fund had, first of all, the concurrent process between our departments or between the two portfolios, Treasury and itself. I mean, it's very important. So even the way that board is constructed, even the way the committee is structured, it is a board that governs its operations and obviously that board has people from different portfolios. So that's critical. The issue of disbursement of funds, the Treasury has some talent responsibility and process around that. However, we've taken very, very strongly this particular issue. But talking all of that, I think part of the dilemma that the ARF has up till now is that, and I want to now use the example of this park, all of that, and some of the difficulties that we experience so that the project members are able to appreciate that. There is a disaster in Somalia. There's a decision either at the level of the AU or at the level of summit meetings that it needs to get an action. That action comes with fees, but we have our checks and balances as a council to talk through the public finance management legislation. So that is that dilemma of a rapid response vis-a-vis clients, etc., etc. Now there is ways to overcome this. One of those ways, so it's not that the PFMA will not allow one to do that. It's a question of putting the mechanism in place. And what we've taken and what we've seen over time the ARF has done is rather serve as a disbursement fund to the international agency, say LECA, for example, that then deals with this, and they then, if there's a problem in Haiti, our money will go to say LECA as an example, they then will disperse. Now, as a developmental agenda, I think the key question is, how do we, as it is, so I'm getting to a more strategic question. So if we do put 200 million rand out, and then therefore we'll go to the ARS, what we started to look agencies. First of all, are we able to in a sense ensure that the objective has properly been reached, or are we comfortable from a financing perspective we've been able to disperse this money to the international agency? That's minimalistic and we're able to do that. Are we able to make sure that when the Food Health Organization and the WHO, when they buy and procure their products from, are we able to say it's important that from the farmers in South Africa, and even if one wants to go deeper, in terms of ensuring that black farmers in South Africa are also supported through it, now it becomes developmental. And there's always that coherent contradiction in vis-a-vis developmental and that. So the minimalistic process is get it out of the book, get it to an international agency, and they will do it.
from a transformation developmental perspective, we will say, is it possible that some of it, not all of it, this is the thinking now into the future that we will have to do, that we are able therefore also to make sure that where we procure from at the end. Now it therefore doesn't negate the issue of non-compliance with the procurement regulatory. So I'm not dealing with the issue of what came out into the public process, the investigation. Whatever I've just said, Honourable Chairperson, doesn't take away the compliance responsibility. So we had a year ago, we convened a meeting with all the humanitarian aid organizations. Early last year, and I've convened that meeting as the minister. And one issue that they always say, in fact, your disaster interventions are many times not disaster interventions, because it's so after the fact. Not doctors without borders, gifts of the givers, and other organizations, they are there on site. The dilemma is, we are sitting with the regulatory responsibility. How to overcome that? The law does make provision for it. For example, there's nothing stopping the Director General of the Department, or in this case on the AOS, process to advertise upfront to have certain organizations on the roster, meaning we've gone through a rigorous process, and thereafter make sure that when the disasters happen, just call on those organizations to quickly give what we call it, permission. So I'm highlighting that issue because some of what we've seen in the first, this is the first year, this is the year under review, if I'm right, the financing department, that at the level of the ALX, there were also local procurement that. This was the first time. And I think what should have happened, and I think that was missing from where we are sitting, it should have taken into account the issues that can pop up, that because our compliance issues and our checks and balances issues must be difficult. So I'm going to conclude and hand over therefore to the technical presentation is, one, we've noted, two, we can respond on the issues that was recommended by the AG that we've already started with that. We however do believe we must not hide away or shy away from actually dealing with the critical concerns that all members, beyond political situation, where we saw it the last 2 months as raising, and that we'll need to deal with that, pull that together, get the recommendations out of that, and deal with whatever must be dealt with through that process, and then go forward. And somehow, our advice is also possibly that at least as we start the first quarter, etc., and get into a deeper analysis that is regularly interaction on the ministerial intervention starting to, in a sense, clean the gaps and clear the gaps. So that I'll turn over to Andrew.
Thank you,
Mr.
Chairman.
Can I request that lecture for 10 minutes at the most, and then come back to your presentation? Okay, thank you so much. We're starting the meeting. Thank you so much. We'll have at this point the active GG, Dominique, please proceed.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair, Honourable members of the Portfolio Committee, Deputy Minister, colleagues, and friends from the media. I see you are here. I'm not going to speak for long, Honourable Chair, because the Deputy Minister has largely covered my presentation. We do have a technical presentation that covers the finances, which is ready to be presented. So I'm going to summarize what I was going to present to allow the CFO to go into the technical presentation that covers finances and how we utilize our budget. If you can go to the last three slides, which will just really just summarize some of the points that the deputy minister has made. I'd like to jump on that, the context which is already provided. What's the challenges? Yeah, just say that. These are some of the issues that have been highlighted by the AG that the department has noted that much of them need to address. The ICT infrastructure in the department requires attention. We are in the process of also restructuring because there was an issue that has been raised of the organogram in the department. And that process that is currently underway will also address a specific matter, including upgrading the ICT infrastructure in the department and all our missions abroad. The issue of the asset management in the department, CFO will also touch on that. As much as that we are giving attention to, as well as the issue of paying suppliers within territory. This is a cabinet directive. We actually don't have a choice but to comply. Government can't be responsible for killing small businesses in this country. And if you don't pay them within 30 days, you completely you create problems. People don't meet their financial obligations because there are employees to pay, etc., etc. So the department is taking this matter quite seriously. We are currently on 77% in terms of compliance. The target is obviously to reach 100%. The implementation of the findings of the organization function assessment, it has given us a picture in terms of direct flex within the organization, so that we improve broadly organizational performance. So we will be taking that forward, as well as the finalization of the forensics bill, which is currently with the DCSA for comment. So it has gone through the department, all the steps, the law advisors have looked at it, and we are receiving comments from the Department of Public Service Administration. Next slide. Now, this is what we are going to be doing. Obviously, we've noted the findings of the Auditor General, and we accept them. We are fully aware that some of the issues raised by the AG are new, as the AG was saying earlier on. In certain instances and areas, we have actually regressed as opposed to rectifying progress. We accept that. And accordingly, we have put measures in place to address the shortcomings, as the Deputy Minister was saying. We're also noting the disjuncture raised by the AG between what is obviously made a successful score by the department, but at the same time, some challenges at the level of the administration, which speaks to management issues, as the AG was saying. Now, the Minister has consequently decided to set up a task team to assist the department management with the implementation of the AG's recommendations, because we believe the highlight areas where we need to zoom into to improve performance. The task team will serve as a monitoring and evaluation team for the Minister and the two ministers. The objective being to get the department back to clean audit. In as much as we accept the unqualified audit, some departments would clap hands if they were to reach that. They are not satisfied with an unqualified audit. We want to get back to clean audit, where there are no matters of emphasis. And we believe that the team will assist us to get back to that. Obviously, the ARS investigation that has been set up, it's expected that it will produce some recommendations as they look into the affairs of the African Rising Fund. The Deputy Minister has already said that this is the way it has always been operating since inception. So it's all back to the day when it started operating, always conducted the technology the same way. However, now that the FATCA has been promulgated in June, we want the investigation to also assist us to draw the necessary lessons from how ARF was conducting its business so that SAPA does not repeat those mistakes, which is why for us it's a positive development that will look into the affairs of this ARF coming back. The process to operationalize SAPA is underway. There was a presidential proclamation on the 14th of November. They have been already access in media to set up the secretariat, which will hopefully come into operation very soon once the recruitment process is completed. We also want to say that from looking at the annual report, it's very clear that the department has largely achieved its key strategic objectives. We would like the main targets. We continue, obviously, to pursue the African agenda as we implement South Africa's foreign policy, informed by our national interests as a country. The annual report does paint a picture of the department that is working around the clock to ensure that South Africa maintains its influential global standing. On that note, Chair, I would like to hand over to the CEO going into the finances and the other technical issues that the Honourable Members would like to deal with. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you so much. Mr. Ramachal, are you ready?
Yes, I'm ready, Chair.
Okay. Please proceed. Okay, perhaps just a note, Mr. Ramadan. Please be so kind to point out to us on which pages of the slide, which slide you'll be focusing your presentation on. In fact, if you go along, you don't have to take from one slide to one slide. Because remember, the GM has, you know, picked on some slides. The acting DJ has also picked on some slides. So, yeah, thanks.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. My presentation will cover just the financial report for the period 2012-2013 for both the department as well as the ARF. But on a high level, just to talk to the issue that we have reported in the annual report. The first part has to do with the department. For the period that we want to highlight in terms of performance, that in terms of the report, we've been receiving unqualified audit opinion from the Auditor General in terms of the work that we do. Just to also indicate that in terms of the mandate that we need to, with guarantee from National Treasury, that we need to do more with less. So we are incorporating that. The highlights that we have indicated in terms of the funding, we managed to host the BRICS Summit without receiving additional funding from National Treasury, which we did that successfully. So through the RIPTA that I created from our party to do that. So as well as the campaign for the chairperson of the AU, we've done that within the baseline allocation. So we are incorporating that call to do more with less in terms of the resources. And the other area in terms of the global representation, the number of missions that we've indicated that we're managing in terms of 125 missions, which we have got challenges that we manage on a day-to-day, which is the foreign exchange thing that we need to deal with, especially the current condition. We are always finding ourselves in a difficult position. So we managed to do that within the baseline that is allocated to the department. Just to like to be talking about the credit card, this is just a summary, the program on how we have performed, which is part of the annual report. And the overall percentage is 98%, which is basically the spending. So that to indicate, Honorable Chair, to the members that one of the issues that we manage, as I indicated, the exchange rate, is the margin of safety that we need to manage on a regular basis.
We tend to follow. We follow the screen of the country. Sorry, Mr.
Samantha.
We follow the screen behind us.
It's fine.
Are there any other presentations that will follow? Is this it? Okay. Yeah, please, let's make other copies. I can wonder why we receive a lot of copies now. Who kept them? No, they are saying no. Okay, it's fine, it doesn't matter. It's fine, no, I think proceed. Proceed in the meantime. The copies are coming. Remember, those copies are available. Who has a copy? Do you have a copy? No.
I'm helping you.
No, I'm waiting for that. Yeah, those members that have please share. Please, the rest of us can share on the projector, the screen there. Okay.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. The panel was saying that as a department we need to manage our budget in terms of the margin of safety, which in terms of the foreign exchange, and one of the challenges that we have. That we don't have a central financial management system. We have a different system for issues, and that process gives us need to manage it in terms of how it interfaces to our reporting system. So it's one of the challenges that talks to the ICT in terms of the specific area that we need to manage in terms of the integrated financial system. So we have then approached Treasury to see to it that we need to be prioritized the implementation of the integrated management system, which they have committed to say the rollout for the IMFS will be in 2019. But they then agree that we can force them to find an interim solution in terms of that process. But that is the challenge that we were within the budget. So it is page 5. And page 6 is just a summary in terms of the economic classification, how we spend the money. The budget of 5.2 billion, which then we have unspent funds of 86 million, which is basically the margin of safety that I was referring to, because we need to manage the foreign exchange movement in terms of the budget. Just to indicate the, this is just to highlight on a graph in terms of the way the distribution was in terms of the budget. The most cost driver is compensation of employees, that we spend 42% of the budget, and the next is 29%, which is our obligatory expenses, which talks to our leases commitment in terms of other benefits that we provide for the official that are stationed abroad. The only amount that is on red is basically our discretionary expenses, where we move around in terms of the operations of the department, and the 90% is basically the transfer that we made as a department to international organizations that are there as a member, such as the UN, the AU, as well as the SADC. So all the organizational information, and in this case we didn't have much of the foreign exchange movement in terms of the payment, but we are expected in terms of how we report our financials that at the end of the financial year, this along 31st of March, we need to review our cash in terms of the forex, which is the area that we are uncertain because we need to then deal with the economic conditions in terms of how the rent is performed in all these 125 countries that missions that we are operating abroad. So this is just to indicate the area that we have sort of program on why we identify some spending which we are re-answered due to 114 the projects that we've run which we are currently finalizing in the current financial year. So just to reflect on the audit outcome, we already indicated that we compare with the spending that Auditor General arrived. So we were working together in terms of that process What we will focus on is the commitments that we have made as management in addressing the finance. So what we indicated, committed, is that we need to then establish an appropriate, which is page 11, effective oversight process over the financial and performance reporting, which is basically what we are not doing correctly in terms of our review for quarterly reports that we've been preparing. So we are then, as a department, introduce that process, which is a review that is done on a quarterly basis, so that we can make that commitment. And one of the challenging parts is the reconciliation that we're not performing on a regular basis on the item. We'll only do reconciliation on higher level in terms of where we are as a finance team on a consolidated level. So then we have demonstrated that this must be done on a micro level, that each and every machine or each and every account that needs to be reconciled, we have that in place. And then we have, one of the challenges as we've been working with papers was the filing part, that we receive all the documents from machines in terms of the monthly return that comes to the department. So we have then increased the effectiveness in terms of how we need to handle that. We're also looking at the better ways on how to improve and to incorporate technology in how we keep our records. And the other part, that is the tracking system that we are looking at as part of the commitment that we've made to AG in how to improve our record keeping, which will also talk to the invoices. As I indicated, that currently we don't have a procurement system which is rolled out to machines. The procurement system that we have is only for head office in the form of a logic, which doesn't have an ability to deal with multi-currency processes, because we have more currencies that we are using in terms of that. So we are moving in that direction to say, as a interim, we need to put a tracking system so that we can be in a position to monitor the payment of 30 days, including machines abroad. So that is where we have challenges in terms of the procurement process. And then we also, then the head office created an awareness in terms of the 30-day payment period. We have various forums that we then look at this in terms of how we should improve in that process, as well as the supply chain business unit to manage that process. Just to indicate that we talk about the reconciliation, and one of the challenges and assets which we have implemented very late, as the Auditor General has confirmed, that we only implemented measures that were effective in February. Unfortunately, it was only 2 months to the end of the financial year. So we have then rolled out the hard track system that we are currently using to monitor assets to all machines, so that they can be able to do that from their call center. And our role as head office is able to review and see that all these are done on a regular basis, as well as the fiscal asset verification in terms of that process. We have then committed with the General to say we're going to do a joint fiscal verification process, where they will be able to monitor whether they are gaps, so that we can improve on that. So before the year end, so that we are having a preventive measure so that we can improve, and that the report that we should present you should be able to give us that improvement. And the other part that we look at is the capacity in terms of the skill set within the corporate services to say extend into the machines in terms of the financial practitioner that are handling the affairs of the machine, in terms of the ongoing improvement in terms of the skills, in terms of the compliance with rules and regulations, so that we then improve in that area. And also to then ensure the benchmarking with other role players in this area, which is basically the foreign ministry, in terms of best practices, so that we can then continue to then improve in our reporting. Just to then highlight on the ARS, which is basically one of the responsibilities that we provide support as department, because you don't have a separate secretary, you don't have a separate financial division that manages them. So we then perform that responsibility. I think this has been already done in terms of the overall responsibility, but the fund has been operating in this. And one of the issues that was then presented in the previous committee was that we then move and migrate the server. So just to reflect on this, that the ARF we still have in the current financial year, that the ARF was to be reviewed through a developmental fund. So currently we don't have we have a sub which is basically will perform the secretary of the AFR in terms of the disbursement of the fund. Just to indicate that the areas in terms of the disbursement that we made in terms of the electoral assistance, the mental assistance, as well as the socio-economic development, as well as the capacity building projects, which we partner with other government departments such as DPSA, staff in terms of how these projects are rolled out. Just to give an outcome, is that in terms of the amount, just to highlight this part, that the amount that was appropriated in the 2013 financial year is $517 million, and the fund accrued interest in terms of the money that is banked with the Reserve Bank, and that the amount that was received as revenue is $34 million, and the accumulated funds available at the end of the financial year, which is basically the amount was $1,384,000,000, which AGS reported in terms of the financial health, in terms of us able to meet our commitment as government for the projects that have been committed. The overall expenditure for the year 2012 was spent around about in terms of this area of priorities, which is prevention and resolution of conflict, socio-economic development, integration, humanitarian assistance, as well as the human resource development, which amounted to $1,070,000,000. This is just an analysis of expenditure. I just want to indicate in the graph format, which indicates how the spending was. So in terms of the ARS in the previous year, the spending was very low. So in the 2011, I think we only reported the expenditure of $8 million as the expenditure for the year. And the current year, we indicated previously that we spent more than $1 billion in terms of the disbursement of the funds. And that was made possible because the ARS accumulated the surpluses from previous amount. So the expenditure, that's how we treated it. And currently, this is what the expenditure is running. We currently spend under about $8 million in terms of the new projects that we're taking. So just to indicate the challenges that we've encountered, is that the motel assistance, that is where we are called upon a short notice to provide the assistance. The challenge is that we don't have the approved policy that will let us govern. I think that is what talks to the governance in terms of the policy and procedure that will then allow the disbursement as well as the implementation of projects in a consistent manner in terms of what we need to do. So we have then, in terms of the responding to that, is the issue of the appointment of the implementing agent in this case. As the Deputy Minister has indicated, that the fund was basically available to be disbursed, and in terms of that disbursement, we used to disburse to government, or to institutions that are of international standing in terms of the work that they do in terms of the humanitarian assistance. In terms of, for example, you have the World Food Program, you have the NGOs that we used to work with in terms of how we dispense that. So, but currently then there was local procurement, which then they identified as one of the issues that should be governed within the particular framework. So the audit findings, as we indicate, there are three areas that AGS already reported on, which complies with the regulation and the laws and regulation, performance information, as well as the system of internal control. So this is just the indicating in terms of irregular expenditure, which were then reported in the annual financial statement. And the area of misstatement was the level of the project that we discussed, which AG then in our engagement, then we agreed that in terms of the principle that we followed, the irregular expenditure will come to 529 for 2012-13. And in terms of the previous year, which is 2012-13, was basically 10 million. And the commitment that we have made was to say, even though we don't have permanent secretaries, and we work within the department processes, then it's important that we have a database of suppliers that are basically dealing with those criteria that we've listed in terms of humanitarian assistance, in terms of the the emergency that requires that ARS should implement. We have subsequently then issue a tender to invite the service provider to then present their expression of interest, so that when there are these issues of emergency level to then send out a quotation to request tender, so that we can be able to respond within immediate period. And the other issue was basically the detection of the irregular expenditure, and the implementing unit in this case is more in the mission side, so we then put some support in terms of what we need to do in terms of the checklist that must be done in terms of the project management, as well as the area that we talking about. We have a draft policy of emergency relief and emergency assistance, which need to be finalized so that we can able to cover the areas that were reported by AG as a concern. And one of the issues that were reported is the absence of a track plan and an annual performance plan, which we didn't have in the life of the ARS. The tripling of the annual report, we also included the strategic plan and the annual performance plan for the period 2018-14 in order to comply with that requirement of us meeting the regulations in terms of the APP. And we are in the process of finalizing that and the implementation of the risk management in terms of the engagement that we need to do with the internal audit to assist us, as well as the audit committee in the development of that. We've already developed a standardized service level agreement, as well as memorandum of understanding. If the projects are approved, then we'll be able to then give the recipient of such project to then sign the relevant document before any disbursement can be made. I think that is what is key in terms of the governance process as it were. And then we also received the letter, given letters to all members who are the members of the advisory committee in terms of the letters, as well as the terms of reference that we developed in terms of their responsibility in terms of that. So the function, which is the organogram, because the act doesn't provide for any organogram, because that's the fund. So we then recommended that the third party then take over the work of the secretary, which is a government, is a government component, which is basically then able to perform all the oversight responsibility in line with the PFMA as well as the treasury regulation. So this is the commitment that is made from our mission. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you so much, Mr. Marshall. Honorable members, it's any questions? There were just before we start the issues that were noted, the issues that were raised earlier, and those that have raised them, they've been responded to. And they've been responded to, so the expectation is that there'll be new questions and new issues. Let me start with Honorable Davidson, come to you, Honorable Elok, and then Honorable Kupas.
Mr. Chairman, first of all, I thought the Minister's gone, the Deputy Minister's gone, but I just want to thank him for his explanation with regard to the ARS and acknowledge the fact that I recognise that there is a tension between speed and regulatory control, and I think he did attempt to deal with it, but I think one has to reinforce the fact that there are regulatory requirements, and I think we have to keep within that, because that's what the is required by the law. Can I just ask you, because you've never really been officially informed, what is the status of the director general? If he had been suspended, I think we need to realize what the terms of that suspension are. And obviously, whether a disciplinary inquiry will be held if necessary. But what I did want to ask is this, and perhaps on the ARS, the acting DG said, in respect of the way the ARS has worked, he's always operated like this. Now, if we've always operated like this, I had to ask the Auditor General, why were these problems of governance and leadership not picked up at an earlier stage? Why all of a sudden this year are we facing those problems? And why do we not register Secretary of State? I also want to ask, because the minister may appoint the concurrent authority of Treasury. Where is Treasury in all this? Because if Treasury is responsible for paying money out, then should they, as guardians of the PSLA, should have been quite connected about ensuring that these regulatory controls were actually adhered to. So one can look at the department and the authority there, but also has to look at the judiciary and say, where were they for the concurrent authority of the secretary? Which brings us to the next point, because one of the key arguments used by the Director General, why we have to have a separate act for that. What happened to that? We were told 2 years ago, quite categorically, that the ARS is constituted in terms of an act, that he was quite determined, because of the complicated nature of the way the thing has structured, the terms of reference, etc., that there were two bills that we were going to have to contemplate in the near future, a few years ago. One was the SASPA bill, and the other one was the Foreign Services bill. We see neither, but that's another story. Why, I don't know why, has there been a change of thought in respect of the SASPA bill? Because that's not clear. Just in terms of the ARS, we have a lot of programs that have been subsidized or contributed to. Is it possible to get a breakdown of exactly what those programs are? We're told it was 500 something odd million, but surely this committee should be advised as to what exactly those programs were subsidized. And then what's the contribution to the rules? And I'm very aware of the fact that we have to do less with more. I'm also very aware of the fact that the grand dollar exchange rate is depreciated by about 30% this year. How do you do more with less? And more particularly, I want to ask the question, and how I have to bring in an ex-ambassador, Tony Leon, I don't know if you're ready for it. You made one very certain point there. And that applies particularly in respect of economic diplomacy. One of the key, missions of our mission report is most fantastic from a trade. He makes the point in his book that 55% of his budget he could utilize to promote South Africa. The rest was all expenditure that was fixed that he couldn't use. And he had to go literally cap in hand to businesses, more particularly foreign businesses, in order to raise funds to do really promotional things that he did. Now, he did. But the point I'm asking you is this. Think about the problem that we are entering a new area where economic diplomacy is hugely important to the much more active. But on the other side of the coin, we're not providing the funding for our diplomatic mission to actually do this type of work. So you're giving them an unfounded mandate. Now, you know, some people who have the drive and the energy and the context can get out and raise those funds, like Tony Leon did, but, you know, not all ambassadors are like it. Let's be honest. not even we've made it the same area. Some people don't like raising money. isn't it and that's faced with the declining rank. Does it become more of a problem? The question has to be raised. How are you managing your diplomatic missions abroad in that context? Just one last one, because I don't want to take up too much time. As a general question, it comes to the point of the National Development Plan. Now, in an earlier speech, I raised the criticisms, and there were very many criticisms, of the paragraph in the National Development Plan of your department. Now, I don't want to mention that criticism, but they did. Soon thereafter, there was a statement that I was in business day saying that that chapter had been withdrawn and it was going to be replaced. Now, is that the case? Because I also look at this document and I've gone through it. And unlike other departments in the government, where, now here the person saying, all departments are going to have to be put in line with the National Development Plan. There is not one difference to the National Development Plan in this document. There's a juncture here. Either this department follow the National Development Plan, albeit in a revised form, or not. And I just think it's a huge disjuncture that, because ultimately, we as a committee and our mandate is to make sure that we are looking to you to actually perform according to your mandate, and your mandate according to the President is coming from the National Development Plan. No, we don't have this. Thank you.
Thank you. The Minister has mentioned task teams, investigations are going on. Is it possible that we can have time frames and exactly when we can respect the reports? Have the committees and the task teams been established, and how far the investigation and what's their term of references, and when can we as committee get that? Another thing is you've already spent 98% of your budget, and I'm worried. You're not going to run out of money because you have got a strat plan, you have got ATP, so what are you working? Again, how do you know that you're not going to overspend this year? And what are you going to do to curb that, to make sure? Then your asset management, that's been going on for a long time, and I know it's a huge thing. But can we as a committee just have something more brief to know? There is a team or there is people, and what are you going to do about it? Because it's millions and millions and millions of rand that's lying there without any control. And the last thing the mission board wrote, I'm always asking, is there monitoring? Is there oversight? Because we as a committee just have to rely on what we hear from the department. And now after this report, I'm very worried, because you always promise us and says that the monitoring is fantastic and the oversight is doing well and there's value for money and all that. But looking at this, I don't think that this is good enough. We as a committee must have some more insight of the role that you're playing, that the department is playing, that we can get more info on what is exactly going on at the mission. How's the money spent? What's the money spent on? And whatever basis you use, that we can tap into that to see that things are going right. Thank you very much.
Just one correction, the report is for period ended on 31 March of this year. So that budget was already spent. So we are in the current year and the new financial year that will end on the 31st of April. Okay.
Thank you.
Okay.
By the Deputy Minister, the HMDC and the CFO. I think what comforts me is that when going through the report and I've missed the not very too many heads, I've missed the input by the AT, and having read the document and having read the opinion of the AT, I'm comforted by actions that have been taken by the department. Because you could have sensed the harsh tone that were coming from the AG's report. And therefore, when the presentation was going through from the DM, actually since by the actions that have been taken, the activity and the CFO, I was a bit comforted to see the processes that are putting in place on the presentation. And finally, because there are a lot of documents that I'm going to refer to, and I hope I'll be able to take you through so that you're able to follow. But I think one of the things, Chair, is to look at what has been achieved by the department. And last week we had an independent body that met with us as a committee, reflecting some of the achievements and where they are already there. So we have to go back to think, we feel this financial gain. What is it that the department, what is this financial gain that we're looking at? What is it that the department has committed to do and how far they are able to do? And comforted by the fact that 98% expenditure. But there's one thing that I always raise, check, and which I would ask the CFO to clarify for me. I have a perception and I have a view most of the time that when people speak about surplus, they speak about non-expenditure. I've seen areas of surplus in the report. One of them is in the big document, the department on the page 31, and on the other one, it's somewhere around on the financial, also the surplus of about 10 or something like that. If that can be highlighted, what is it that is being reflected there? But the other issue was on the, and I put a list of that, but if I do choose financial, the issue of corrections of the financial. That previously were not reflected on the investment. If they can be clarified what happened there and why we had to get into that. And the issue I want to speak on again, I would not be able to say this is the program I have to work for one chair. I always understood both in a page of this to many documents and I have to page out. But the issue of advocacy and more engagement on matters of international relations, I think that for me, we need to really get going as the department. It needs to get more visible. And I'll tell you why, Chair, is that currently South Africa has 324 main channels. Surely we should be able to find space engaging with media houses to try and profile issues of international relations within this country. Because at times we have perceptions of the public, we are viewed as the public, but it's not because they are informed on why we are embarking on those particular issues, for example, in South Africa. And I'll take an example, Chair, on the issue of the AU versus the Security Council. Quite a whole lot of people coming out speaking, but there isn't much time that was spent within the council to explain to South African citizens why would take the particular element as South Africa, why would feel this, and I think in the media houses that sit with us, to take the responsibility, because I know a popular FM radio station, tried to engage and find ways. But if I'm reading the commentators are somebody who does not even come from South Africa, I've listened to the FM, they interviewed somebody who was not a South African, who spoke on the issue. And you could not find a South African perspective for the matter. Because besides it being an AU issue, you have to have a South African perspective. I know you're dealing with the issue of ended financial nature. I'm just taking this one particular as an example. To say that there's others, the Libya, the others that have happened, but we find at times, South African society finds itself a bit confused. And if we could take a space as the department on more advocacy and making sure that South African public addresses and are understanding. And one another thing that I said last week, Chair, was you go to other countries when you visit, for example, Zambia, Zimbabwe and others, when the president and the minister are at platforms as you, UN, AU, they focus on what that country is achieving there, wants to achieve, from the media perspective in the country. So that South Africans know what is the president speaking about or what is the minister saying on our behalf. So I see that that area for me needs to really come very strong and come out in terms of just making sure that we are able to achieve what we want to achieve. Here I had issues around the finances in terms of unauthorized expenditures and all that. And I think for me, what the DM said here on, I'm comfortable because you get worried when AD raises issues of leadership. You get worried when AD raises issues of no system. You don't want such things, there are no systems. And we have that because the CFO has clarified herself on the strategy plan and all those things, and it's for us to be that monitor and that process. from the quarterly legality trailer with the entity to understand what is happening and the activities, what is the practice that it has to do. And just to make sure that we do not find ourselves here, because for me it's like there are lessons that need to be learned from this process. What are those lessons? Because we need to go back to think, how do we get to where we are, firstly, where we do not have structures, we do not have compliance with the law and all that. How do we get there? And how do we in future avoid that? While we're correcting the situation, how do we avoid getting there again? How do we make sure that what has been raised by the AG does not become something that is raised? I mean, you can see from the AG where we think the change is necessary question. You know, maybe improving, not improving your control. And hopefully because now when the CFO who have to manage. But the issue of internal political control, which is important, that it has to do its work, and it has to assist the department in making sure that some of these issues are not being picked up by the AG at the end of the year, but are sorted out within time of quarterly, that we don't end up next year again sitting between things and having the same challenges. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll try to be brief. Also, general comments and perhaps questions they come. I might also concur with my colleagues and welcome these presentations. Obviously, there are new things here that we are seeing, particularly where it is said that there's emphasis on remedial measures on most of the things that we've seen going wrong in the past. But I also wanted to ask the minister a question, but he's not here. I wanted to go into the minister's mind and ask him to go into the president's mind also with regard to the ICT. I know that from the times of Mr. Mandela and Simbeki and then President Zuma, we have been talking about the African agenda, the African century, the African renaissance. And I think that is why South Africa assisted in the establishment of the geo-economic entity like NEPAD and also the geopolitical entity like the ANU. But now my question is, I heard the president talking about, with the president of France, that they would not support impunity. But my question is that, is it so difficult now for South Africa to assist that the continent now moves towards a geolegal or tribunal entity that would deal with the issues of Africa rather than refer them to another imperial power? That was the question I wanted to the minister, because I believe if we move in the universal spirit or principle of self-determination, we need to take that leg where we have that strong legal process also established in the continent. The other comment that I want to make, I think the Auditor General and my colleague there was making the presentation. What's the name again? Was it you? No. Oh, yes. I must say that I'm sure the Auditor General and yourself, you feel like I feel. You know, I feel like a person who's been arguing that I have 10 years experience in this, doing it. Every year. And I say, 10 years, serious, you can't tell me different. But then somebody tells me that, look, you have 1 year experience, repeat the 10 times. Because I've listened to this, and I feel that I do have a 10 year experience, but it's a 1 year experience, repeat the 10 times. Because my problem here, Mr. Chairman, I think colleagues should also It was also wisdom. It's the question of, we go to the strategic planning, we do the strategic plan, strategic objectives, but when it comes to the assessment, we deal only with the quantity. We say we have spent so much here. We don't deal with the qualitative process that informs transformation. We simply say we have spent so much on prevention of this, on resolution of this. But we know that the overall approach to foreign policy program that we have touches on the African agenda, South-South relations, North-South cooperation and human rights. But when we do the assessment, we simply talk about the quantity, or how much we've spent, how many people were produced, how many people were trained, how many people were educated, but not the qualitative process that deals with transformation. For instance, with the U.S., we talk about transformation of the form of the U.N. structure. Every time we talk about that, I don't think we have tangible indicators, except that, yes, we have participated in chairing some of the big ones. Tangible indicators that to say that we have, in fact, reformed the structure. Because we need reformation, as Marx would say, you are simply leaving the pillars intact. You want to talk about transformation, care about transformation. So the pillars are intact, you leave them intact. My last point is, Mr. Chairman, I want to concur with my colleague here about public diplomacy. I read someone that there has been now an Ubuntu radio that has been established by the public to deal with this issue of public diplomacy here and abroad. I think we welcome that, because I think it would deal with the question that she raised. Mr. Chairman, let me leave it at that.
Okay. Let me restate the rules of this house, of this meeting. Either you put your phone on silent or you switch it off altogether. It's highly acceptable. It is the second or third time that I hear a phone ringing in this meeting. Now, we would say it's unparliamentary. So please, out of order, I'm highly unacceptable. So please make sure that you switch off, or you at the least put it on silent. And if it's quite active, I would suggest you rather switch it off, because it also interferes with the recording equipment. Well, if it brings anything, but if it does it a lot, it becomes a problem. Okay. All right. Baba, the acting DG has indicated that he's enjoying some level of proximity to the minister. He would tap into some of the knowledge pertaining to the issue that raised, perhaps hopefully address some of your, if not all, some of your of the issues raised. Let me perhaps also just quickly raise, or perhaps underscore two issues. Maybe the department must have to come back to us on the subside, on the road. Kelly, I picked up, actually, during the briefing by the young lady, remember the young lady that briefed us in one of our recent committee meetings, that there was a departure from the initial conception of SAPA and its relationship to ARF. Now, we've been waiting and pushing, in fact, the department to bring the legislation, the SAPA bill, to us. And every time there were new data, in fact, we've been pushing for this for the past 4 years. and every time they say September and then it's next year. But it never happens. But until I picked up during that briefing that something has changed. It is not, it's a departure from what was presented to us initially. And the department never briefed us on that change. So we will need a briefing on that and urgently so that we understand because you see if Parliament is to approve your budget for next year, then surely Parliament must know what it will be approving for and what will be the government arrangements around this and that in any relationship to the AIF, because from what I could from what I could discern was that ARF wasn't going to be repealed anymore as was initially stated. Because what we would have had was a foreign service bill, a SASPA bill, and at a later stage, the ARF repeal legislation that would effectively then usher in SASPA. Now, that is not going to happen from what I can discern the talk. It is just that nobody has said anything. So we need that briefing urgently, very urgently, so that we know what the position is. To discuss the Osaka issue now, I don't think it will actually really detract from the annual report that it is to post. But it's a matter that we need an urgent briefing. Then, secondly, what I need clarity on, or perhaps emphasize what are there any time frames attached? Well, I have the document here, but perhaps for the committee to know. Are there any time frames attached to this investigation into the irregular expenditure and, of course, as the scope extended by the minister? I think those are the two methods that I want. There's one. Really clarity on the other one. Okay, members, let's have those responses and then we'll read it out. Will there be any, just for the sake, before you go, any last questions? Nothing.
Thanks, Chair.
Thank
you, Honorable members. A couple of questions to deal with, and then I'll hand over to the CFO, which will also deal with the other. Have the studying with the last two issues. We will prepare a thorough briefing to the portfolio committee with regards to that to highlight the new approach as opposed to what was initially presented so that we are on the same page. So we will try to do this together to get a date and then the department will come and make a presentation. One question raised earlier on around the thinking of South Africa with regards to the creation of a geo-legal entity on the continent to deal with international crime, crimes against humanity, human rights abuse, etc. When we were in Addis over the weekend at the extraordinary summit of the AU to deal with the relationship between the African Union and the ICC, ahead of that summit, commentators and analysts and everybody was saying that Africa is going to be out because of the perceived biasness of the ICC against Africans. And so far all the cases that have been dealt with are African leaders or former. Now, there is an existing court based in Arusha, the African Court of Human and Equal Rights, but its mandate is limited to dealing with cases against states as opposed to individuals. One of the positions of this extraordinary summit is one, to capacitate the court, secondly, to extend its mandate to deal with international crimes dealing with individuals. In other words, the same crimes that the ICC is dealing with, which would in turn make it unnecessary for Africans to refer cases to the ICC. So
that's the position in thinking of South Africa as well as the other EU member states that seem to participate in the court to actually have the mandate of that to be necessary for things to obey the items. And I hope I participate. The other question that I wanted to deal with, which is very close to my heart, I'm very passionate about this, how we communicate the work of the department and broadly South Africa's foreign policy to South Africans and the world. You know, I don't know whether honorable members have done some kind of scan research. There are actually two foreign policy correspondents in South Africa, two, currently, which means there isn't a big appetite, even from the media houses, to focus on the South African foreign policy or international relations, which then translate into our population just having indifference to what goes on in the world. We want to change that, and we're doing several things. One is the one that the distance that I referred to of Triple E's, where we actively and directly engage communities, they're not provinces, through travel teams. In fact, this Saturday will be in the Limpopo. 2 weeks after that will be in the Eastern Cape, then we'll be in Switzerland, and then Maguire. That's one. Secondly, when it comes to the electronic and print media, because we've tried to do the sort of thing that the honorable member was suggesting, where you know, give them content, engage them, try and secure slots, all of these things. But the reality is that if you don't own the platform, you will always be reduced to 5 minutes they get found by from you, and then after that they continue with other things. It doesn't matter how many times you try to explain your position on a particular issue. We do the same thing. They come, they decide how they cover the story, depending on what the agenda is or what their point of view is on a particular issue. We then decided to have our own platform, where we can have an ongoing conversation with South Africans and the world about the work that we are doing, where people can ask us questions, continue tap into our thinking and get rationale behind some of the positions that we adopt on any major global issue. We are launching the station tomorrow. By the way, just to deal with the credibility issue, because when a platform is run and managed by a government, it will always be faced with the propaganda, etc. We've also brought in external people to anchor some of the debates. You know, people from the Institute of Global Dialogue, for example, Dr. Sikong Zondi, and other people who are external. Tabitha Lafayne is a known bank ambassador on the African continent. Such individuals will be anchoring some of the debates so that the South Africans, those who are finished, can have, you know, some kind of comfort that kids even hear the independent one. But the objective will be that we'll make foreign policy in that way you highlight the work that we're doing on the continent and elsewhere. So we are doing some talking about the particular issue. The issue of the DG, Honorable Members, he is on leave as we speak, and he will be on leave for the duration of the investigation. In other words, he's not going to come back until the investigation is finalized, because we don't want to contaminate, for lack of a better word, the process, so that when it's completed, people say, you know, he was there, you know, he may have interfered, he may have intimidated people, that's all. Because some of the allegations are leveled against him. So he will remain on leave for the duration of the investigation. The investigator has been given 30 days in which to complete his work. So we're looking at middle of next month to receive the report and the recommendations to the manager, which will then dictate the way forward in terms of how to complete the process. And it may be that there will be a disciplinary process. We don't know. It will really come out of investigation to advise the manager on the way forward. There was a question around the issue of funding. How do we do more with less? Now, I agree with you, Honorable, that ideally we should be funding our missions more to advance our agenda of economic diplomacy, to promote the
country, get more FDI, attract investors, etc. The reality, however, is that we have an ever-expanding mandate, but the funding is going the opposite direction. Part of the training that our diplomats receive is to do exactly that, to do more with less. What is imperative of economic diplomacy is the new direction for all countries. So we need your assistance to appeal to the people with the checkbook to be kind to us, because every year our budget has been cut and we have an ever-expanding mandate as a government and as a country. Now, the issue of the NDP, it's true that the current Chapter 7 is in the National Development Plan did not take into account the input of the department at the time when that document was presented. Nothing, absolutely nothing from the input of the department was incorporated in that chapter. It was done by, we believe, we are told, we don't know how true this is, by consultants. So the department then raised a concern with the people in charge of that document to say, this can't be what we say about South Africa's foreign policy, because this are the facts. And went through the document to show the inaccuracies, not just opinions of people, inaccuracies from a special point of view. On that basis, there was then a decision by the executive that that chapter must be revised. It has been revised. There will be an addendum to the NDP, particularly on Chapter 7. We are currently, our annual performance plan is based on the revised APP, which I'm sure we can share with members of the portfolio committee. I'm not sure why the reference to the NDP is not reflected in this document, because everything that we do now, as you rightly pointed out, has to be derived from the NDP, and that's how our APP and other strategic documents are framed. So I think that's the matter that we'll look at. It may be that we're able to know that some of these things are not. The last thing I want to deal with is how our missions abroad are monitored. All of them report to specific branches of the department, through PMDS, the Performance Management System in the department. There isn't a single mission that goes unmonitored in terms of performance every month. When directories and branches and departments submit monthly reports, the mission is the same. Through that, you're able to track and monitor performance and whether it gets the expectations that they will be addressed by the relevant branches. So there is that system in the branch to monitor and track performance of our mission. The CFO will deal with some of the issues, including the concurrent issue of the treasury.
Seems to be the concurrent from treasury. Based on the fact that the national treasury approved the project, but they're not necessarily involved in the implementation. So in terms of the accountability, it comes back to the accounting of the department. So the only part of the play is basically to approve a project, and they will then they compare in terms of that process. So something that is present on the play. The other matter that I want to respond to the issue of assets that has been mentioned, we have created an asset register. The only part that we were lacking is the monitoring in terms of performance. Physical verification, if all these 125 which then we need to get a reconciliation that we need to perform so that we can manage in terms of the movement. If the asset that has been disposed, we should be able to then take it out from the auditors so that we have the issue of the complete, which was basically the challenge that we identified in terms of the assets that we pick up from the floor which are not in the auditor. So those are the things that we are working on that, and we are very confident that with the measures that we have put in place, which we are doing more time, but we're able to then change the situation. Just to add on the monitoring part, which talks to the quantitative in the conservative part. We have integrated our budget plan with our planning. So in terms of the work that we have been traveling, we are literally we are changing the ranking of the APP for the first 6 months against the budget. So we are in a space where we are reviewing that so that we can get the impact that we need in terms of what we have done during the year. We have the capacity to continue on that. If we then we will make sure we prioritize the assets. The other part is the surpluses. There are two areas because we have a department. The department in terms of surpluses is looking at the funds that were not spent. So we then decided to have them fund and then return back to the institution at the end of the financial year. With the ARF, the surpluses, because the National Trade Appropriate Fund, too important, it's part of decentralization. It's more of a typical grant that the department or the ARF receives from the agency. So when the money is remaining as surplus, then the ARF retains it as part of its capital. So we've got an investment in part where we then accrue interest. So that is the two different institutions, with the department as well as the ARF. And the aggression on the annual financial statement, this is basically the report that we submitted to AG on the 21st of May. When the auditors look at the report, then there were areas, especially in the assets. One of the issues for the department was the treatment of the tributary, because the tributary is a model that when we look at it, there was no financial guidelines of how to deal with the treatment in terms of how we recognize it. So we only then revised that after we submitted, which then of course took this statement, which then in the next financial year won't be returned, because it's a matter that we have taken in the fixed state. We didn't correct it, because the way we have been reporting, we're not in the compliance with the guidelines in terms of how the National Treasury advised the guidelines and how to recognize that. So I think that is the area in terms of where we need to look at. But we are looking on that as we indicated in terms of the quality review, that we are then reviewing our quarterly financial statement so that we can find an appropriate situation.
No, thank you. Acting DG. Let me from the outset say that to us, clean audit is a minimum requirement. It's a minimum requirement on our members. We cannot settle for anything less than that. Now, this department has, over a couple of years, shown that it can attain a clean audit, and it has done so. For the past 4 or 5 years or so, it has had unqualified audits. Now, while that is not necessarily bad, but it is not, it does not meet that minimum requirement. Especially for a department that hasn't had a disclaimer. Are you with me? So I want to be clear, there's a context to it. So when we sit here, or when we sit with the new committee here next year, report, please, we want to see a thing. Now, you have assured us in the nation that you are putting systems in place. You are getting all your acts, together. To sort these problems, which can be solvable, but they require a deliberate and dedicated, department to focus on them and deal with them, including the executive authority and the department. Now, our work is cut out as members of parliament in terms of sharpening our oversight on those specific areas in particular, but also doing it in a way that helps the department to reach these objectives that we have done now and in the past, and I have no doubt that we will certainly do so. Now,
indeed the ARF is a matter of concern, and let me acknowledge the work of the department, the good work that we are doing at the department. Indeed, there's a lot of good work we are doing, and we acknowledge that. But we are also saying that there are problems, especially so far as the ARF is concerned, that needs to be addressed and addressed as a matter of agency. And we will help you to address those issues, certainly. So while we applaud your successes, especially on attaining some of the objectives of the department, and working towards meeting those, we also realize that you need a helping hand. Now, our role, I said, I think 3 years ago or so, colleagues, when I said that the role of Parliament in relation to its oversight over government is not inherently anachronistic, because all of us are part of the bigger, a bigger system to ensure that at the end of the day we provide a better life for our people. That's the ultimate responsibility that we have, the well-being of the citizens of the Republic, and attaining the strategic objectives of the creation of a truly non-racial, democratic, non-sexist, and a prosperous South Africa. Now, while the executive has the primary responsibility to execute these functions, ours is to conduct oversight and monitoring to ensure that they are attaining those objectives. So we are not necessarily, inherently antagonistic forces. There's perhaps, some would say, a dialectical, relationship of unity and struggle, but all aimed towards achieving the same objectives. And so when a department fails in some of the work that it does, or it struggles, at least in my view, personally, because not all the cogs in the wheel are working together, and much more could be achieved. Equally, when we claim victories, or when success is afforded, such as we have, those successes also belong to all of us. So I want to encourage you on behalf of the committee to really take this matter seriously, some of which we have raised in previous years, correctly as you pointed out yourself. We will remain seized with the matters of the department, and we want to get in as soon as possible on the revised chapter of the revised chapter. At the time, we had already taken a decision, sorry, the policy area, around chapter 7, to have that decision, but then it didn't go to cabinet at that stage. And now that it's gone through, so the committee can certainly be briefed on it. Let me take the opportunity to say that we, I think all of us, honorable members, when I say this on all of us, on the behalf of all of us, that we acknowledge the prompt action by the Minister on this matter of the ARF. I actually wanted to quote the discussion that we had with the two of us in Strasbourg around this particular issue, the Minister's action is indeed appropriate, and it provides the required leadership, but equally, it is important that there are consequences. For all departmental officials, and this has nothing to do now necessarily with the question at hand around the year, the matter raised by the AGR on consequence management, performance and consequence management, is critical. If departmental officials can act with impunity and there are no consequences in relation to their performance, because if you look at all these systems and everything, they should have been performed by people that stuff. Now, some people did not do their work. Of course, the accounting officer is ultimately responsible, but it's a collapse of systems, and systems are implemented by people. And if people don't implement, those people are held accountable. And that's what we need to see. I'm sure if I was to ask you, FDG, how many people have been fired, for instance, but this is the word, and how many have been dismissed for non-performance, at least in the past two to five years, probably say zero. But it's an important thing, because that's how you hold people accountable. There's no, you see, in the public service generally, there's this propensity to pay out performance bonuses when people haven't performed, when they haven't met their targets in actual. Because at the end of the day, if a department, now in your case, the department is really fine when you are concerned about the ARS. But in some cases, departments get disclaimers. And yet, somewhere during the year, performance bonuses are paid out. They will ask the question, but how is that even possible? And so people do these things with impunity. They do things with impunity. And it's that type of impunity that we must put a stop to, that we must act, and let them take us to court if they have to. We will deal with the matter in court. But they must know that there are consequences for their actions. Lastly, we are taking our commitment seriously, made to the audit, that is both in our meeting and today here. And we will work together with you to achieve those. Honorable members, thank you so much, and all of the best, but we will have to get back together. We, of course, from here we will compile our BRRR reports, our panel review and recommendations reports. That will become again the tool for conducting oversight of specific issues. But I must say, correctly pointed out by the minister, in doing that we must balance in a way that, you know, adequately says these are the issues, but also these are the successes. On balance, I think we've done well, you know, seek for those specific, you know, issues that need to be attended to. And we'll let the support to help us achieve those. Thank you so much. Only remember, lastly, there's the lunch over there. So please help yourself. Thank you.